I doubt it. Oh, hello, everybody, and welcome to the 50th episode of the Insiders on Real Estate and Marketing.
Wow.
I'm your host, Sandy Hibbard, and I'm joined today by my wonderful co-host, Mr. Mark Miller, representing our sponsor, who is Secured Title of Texas. And today, our guest is Mr. Fabulous Steve Klein, the relentless Steve Klein. And Mark's going to tell you more about him. Before we get into all of that, though, being our 50th show, we're going to do a quick deep dive into what in the world is going on in real estate right now. So
it's madness, total madness.
It's March madness.
It's March madness. It is March madness.
It has nothing to do with basketball.
My favorite time. I know, but I feel like I'm dribbling up and down the court.
Right.
I would say, though, that business, to my surprise, in some degree, is steady.
Yeah.
And we had good January, February, and March is looking pretty solid right now.
Mm-hmm.
Order count off just maybe slightly, but but we had some really good resurgence in January and February, so I was a little bit encouraged by that. What is interesting, because you know where my office is the farthest down the hallway, so that takes a long time to get to me.
That's
but
done on purpose.
As I walk back up to the front, I've got my escrow officers in these, and I hear conversations.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like every other door, what I'm hearing is somebody's discussing something about a judgment, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, and I've said predictively all along, when we get to these kind of markets, people get into duress, and it impacts their property because they get filings against that. So I'm seeing that emergence of suddenly those kind of liens that are on the property that have an impact to how we have to manage those transactions. And like I said before, about one in four transactions, we have to have underwriters involved anyhow to try to get a deal closed. So
I think
that compression of that environment is going to continue. That and combined with the market disruption that's now occurring with the issues with now NAR settling, N-A-R.
Oh, that's an interesting
thing. And we've got one outstanding, Berkshire Hathaway. I guess he's got the most money. He's probably going to decide to still fight it. But everyone, Encompass just settled for almost $60 million this week. That side. So that's going to really.
So are each one of these brokers having to take their piece of the pie that NAR was hit with, or are these individual?
No, the NAR was hit as the association, and it's gone down into markets and into states, and then it's brokerage firms like Keller Williams.
So they're settling
Remax,
their own lawsuits.
Yes,
okay.
and they've settled out of the class action side. What it's going to change is it's going to move into the reality of buyer representation, which has not been the practice. Commissions are going to become more strategic in that side, and then I think it's going
to more paperwork.
Yeah, it's going to cause more of a purging in the marketplace, which I don't necessarily think is a bad thing either to that side. So, you know, it's when things happen like that, it's kind of like things change. You got to change with it, and you got to be more relentless, as
that's our theme
talk
today.
Yeah, that's so. And overall, I mean, rates are not jumping up. They're not really going down. And Fannie Mae's projections into 2025 are still probably around 6% at the lowest. So I think markets adjust to that. But the price not adjusting downward still is impactful for buyers to be able to qualify and be able to buy properties. So there's all kinds. Right now, there's a lot of movement toward trying to understand the impact versus necessarily having a strategy to the impact. So it's kind of interesting to watch this happening out there. And it will settle down and people will come to strategies. Brokerage firms will. The top producers will figure out how to maneuver through that and we'll keep going. We're just, as I always say, I'm thankful to be in the market here in Texas because it's the best place to be. Anyhow, this is my first opportunity to meet Steve, but I became familiar with him because he wanted to educate within our Collin County Association of Realtors. At that time, I was heading up the business development. I'm not anymore for that side, but I reached back out because I liked what his dialogue was and what he was wanting to impact and impart upon us. So I'm going to read a little bit about Steve, and I'm already a little bit fearful because he's third-degree black belt in Taekwondo.
So you better not get this thing wrong.
So exactly, or he may train me, one of the two. He was a seven-time number one salesperson nationally and internationally, sales leader out of a sales force of 5,000, which inspired his book, Sell When You See the White of Their Eyes, which I love that. And he's also interviewed over 500 CEOs about relentless leadership on his Playmakers talk show. So he's got a talk show as well. And he's a thought leader, a relentless expert, in addition to giving back and working with kids in the AVID program, Advanced Via Individual Determination, and in order to develop their relentlessness and leadership skills.
I love that.
And in addition, he helps animal rescue organizations such as StrayDog.org, and I love that as well. So I've had a heart for kids. I've been involved in that side of fighting of child abuse. So he's a well-rounded individual, and I was looking, he survived being fired from his first job after college. I was thinking to myself, hell, I've survived getting fired five times through my career.
Yep.
6 broken bones, a plane crash, a negative net worth of $250,000, and he survived over 30,000 sales presentations. So
that,
I am really.
That's the real survival thing, right?
Yeah, I'm excited to hear what he has to say, and I'm going to turn him loose. Kind of, we're going to start in with the 5 keys toward relentless performance and how to get off your donkey. So, Steve, welcome, and I'm going to let you roll.
Well, thank you, Mark and Sandy. It's wonderful to be here.
It's
a pleasure. I love talking about what it takes to be successful, and that's essentially what relentless is all about. Mm-hmm. It's not giving up. It's not quitting. It's staying with what you want to have. And I think there's a I shouldn't say major, but a big disease going on right now in our country where people will start something and quit and give up too soon.
And totally agree.
Yeah, if you stay with something long enough, you might figure out exactly what you have to do to make it happen.
Yeah.
And you got to go through the bumps that happen on a regular basis to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
And with Mark being in real estate, it's getting going, if you're a realtor, takes a while. But you have to continue and stay with it to make it work. And it's a matter of developing what I call in my book, CCDA, which is correct, consistent daily activity.
Mm-hmm.
You can't be hit or miss. You
and
have
your
to
book
make it.
Is?
Sell them when you see the whites of their eyes.
We'll talk about that a little bit later. Okay.
Once you have a plan, you simply work your plan. It's almost being, one of my favorite movies is Forrest Gump.
Yeah.
And he was a little off a little bit, but there was one scene in that movie where he's playing football. I believe he was playing high school football, and his coach told him when he got the ball as a running back, run and don't stop. And he got the ball, and he ran right out the stadium.
He did
literally exactly what he was told to do.
Right.
And that's why I learned that early in my career, because I was fired from that first job out of college, and that boss rehired me as a salesperson. I knew nothing about selling.
Yeah.
I knew a lot. It was radio advertising. I knew a lot about radio, and I was able to succeed with that. But you simply have to develop a plan for what you need to do to make those things happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the book is all about. That's what Relentless is all about. And there's 5 keys we can talk about. If there's any one specific you want me to talk about, I can talk about that directly.
Mm-hmm. Well, I liked all of them.
Yeah.
And it took me a second to understand what it meant to get off your donkey. And then it hit me this morning. Get off your ass. That's
right.
I'm not afraid
right.
to say that because,
right.
you know, we talk about that here so much, about how necessary it is just to work, just invest in your business. If you're in real estate or if you're in marketing, if you're a singer, whatever it is that you do, get off your donkey and work, you know, put in those hours. And there have been so many times in my business. I have just a small cottage business, insurance agency, while we were just talking about that, marketing agency that I've owned for 24 years. And, you know, through the years, it's been like this. And in those low times, I've thought, I'm just going to get a job. I'm just going to, you know, get my resume. I'm going to get a job. And then Sandy says to herself, but wait, if you would just get up and work and clock in like you're going to have to if you go get that job, you'll get yourself out of this. And sure enough, you know, I can't tell you how many times, but I've been relentless. And 24 years later, here I am. I'm still surviving. I still have a business that helps so many clients realize their dreams.
Wouldn't you think
I've been relentless.
Wouldn't you think the bigger challenge, writing a plan is probably not as much of a challenge as it is to then move in and start implementing the plan? Because I know for myself as well. I mean, I'm sure people get up in the morning, best intentions, whatever their game face is, have their coffee. But there's that moment in time when you've got to engage.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of just, and the engagement, I think, is the toughest part of that.
Yeah.
Once you engage, I think you begin to have.
Absolutely.
Right?
Being relentless, and part of that is consistency. That's what you were talking about in the morning. What do? You need to have a plan every morning. And in most cases, you need to do the same thing every day. Just giving an example. I'm an early riser. I get up at 4 in the
morning.
Myself
as well.
I have a plan. I get the office at 6 in the morning. My office building, there's no one else there. They don't get in until about 8, so I have 2 hours of quiet. I get a lot done. But I have a checklist of things I want to get, usually about 20 things I want to get done every single day, and I just do every single one, I don't think, and some of them I hate doing. But I just do it. And what's interesting is when there's something you really don't like doing and you do enough of it and you start succeeding, it becomes a lot more fun. But there are certain things that need to be done to achieve any kind of success, especially being relentless and sticking to it and not giving up. The very first piece of the talk I give on being relentless is to lock our sights on what we want to have. What is it you want to have?
Yes.
Our mind is a mental magnet that attracts to us what we think about.
In other words, the outcome.
It's all it is. It's seeing that right there. And once you lock into it, what happens, your mind starts helping you see things that you wouldn't have seen otherwise. I'll give you a quick example. When I started my business years ago, I was working out of my home and quickly realized I needed an office. As soon as I made that decision, as I was driving up and down the highways, I started seeing for lease signs on the highway.
Yes.
I never even noticed those before. I signed the lease, I got an office, and I needed boxes to move everything there, and I started seeing empty boxes everywhere to move my office. Things are out there already. One of the things I talk about is women that are pregnant. Once women get pregnant, or the husband's wife gets pregnant, they start seeing pregnant women everywhere. All of a sudden, it's in the water. Or another example is there's a car you want to buy.
Yeah.
You buy that car, and all of a sudden, you start seeing the exact same car on the road. Everybody went out and bought the same car you have.
Yeah.
No, they were out there anyway. You just never paid attention. So by locking our sights, it helps us pay attention to what we need to pay attention to, and it creates success.
And that's scientific. About what happens in our brain.
Very much so.
It's scientific because what we're doing is we're focusing on something that matters to us, and our brain goes, oh, this is important. So I'm going to start showing you that.
That's rather
than all of the noise that we have when we're not decided on something, when we're wishy-washy about something, and all of our mind is just everywhere. But when we say, I'm going to do this, I need an office, or in my case in 2012, I am going to be completely mobile because I want to work anywhere and live anywhere I want. And then before you knew it, all these things started just coming into place, and it's because our brain is wired like that, that it will say, okay, let's start showing you that what you're saying is most important.
And the opposite of that works also. When you don't believe you're going to make it, you attract to yourself what you don't want. And it keeps you from making those things happen. That's why it's so we need to decide what we want to focus on to make those things happen.
Do you think we think too much about all this stuff?
If we don't know what we want, we're thinking and trying to come up with new ideas all the time. But when we lock on it, our brain starts giving us ideas. I had two or three over the last 3 weeks I never thought was going to pop up. And all of a sudden it came to me because I was so focused on the things I wanted to do to make those things happen. But the second step in that goes along with it is once you lock your sights, you know exactly what you want to have, stop thinking and act. Do something based on what you want to do. You may not succeed at it, but you'll learn a lot from falling down, scraping your knee, and you get back up and you learn. It's a learning procedure for you. And if you take a look at any successful person, and in the talk I give on relentless performance and how to get off our donkey, is the stories about how many successful people went through basically hell to get to where they wanted to go. They failed over and over and over again. I can give you an example of one writer who got married, had two children quickly. This is in the early 70s. He was making less than $500 a month. He had to work part-time at a laundromat. His wife worked at Dunkin' Donuts. And he finally got a job as a high school teacher. And he was writing short stories. He was getting rejection letter over and over and over again. He finally wrote one story about a high school student, got frustrated and threw it away. His wife pulled it out of the garbage can the next day and says, you need to complete it. He went ahead and completed it, sent it out to 50 publishers. Finally, one bought it as a short story, got paid $2,500, which back in those days was a lot of money.
That's a lot of money.
He had no phone originally. Now he had a chance to get a phone. And his publisher called back a few months later. He said, are you sitting down? He said, why? He said, I just sold your story for a book. you're going to receive $250,000. Now, that writer by the name of Stephen King became extremely successful by sticking with it. He had a great big barn nail in his wall in his double-wide trailer that he lived in with all the rejection notices that he received over and over and over again. So what it does is something else I talk about. Success does not go like this. Mm-hmm. Success goes like this.
Yeah.
It's something called the 10th multiple. And I got this from the insurance industry. If you double $1,000 mm-hmm. 10 times, how much money do you think you'll have? Rather than guessing, I'll tell you, you'll have $1 million.
I was going to say a million.
2, 4, 8, 16, 32, 64, et cetera, you get $2 million. Let's say a friend of yours, or you told a friend of yours 5 years ago that you were going to be worth $1 million in 10 years. And your friend sees you 5 years later and says, how are you doing towards your million? And you say, I'm great, I have 32,000. Your friend's going to laugh at you. Even at the ninth multiple, you only have 512,000. You're halfway there with one more to go. But if you keep building on your success, you get it. Now, it might take more than 10 multiples mm-hmm, to get there. Mm-hmm. But if you stay with it, lock your sights, stop thinking, you'll achieve what you want to achieve.
Mm-hmm. Activity breeds results. We talk about that a lot. It sounds easy.
And it isn't.
But it's not, because our mind gets in the way, you know, and it's almost like you need to have a coach that every day is holding your hand saying, nope, don't do that, don't think that, nope, this is what you need to do.
That's right.
Because I find for myself personally, and I think a lot of people are like me, that if I've got a new idea of something I want to do, I can find myself talking myself out of it.
Oh, yeah, easily.
Because I'll think too much, and I'll think about all the negatives and the ins and outs. And then I also don't know what to do. You know, sometimes there's something new I might want to try to achieve, but because I am a veteran marketer and I know all the landscape, sometimes it's not easy for me to decide, well, then how do I do it? Should I do it this way or should I do it that way? So our mind does get in the way, you know, in that. And it's just about that consistency.
And with marketing, there's all different directions you go into.
Oh, my gosh. There's
so many
things.
And you have to pick one to find out if it's going to work or not.
Yeah. Yeah.
In most cases, it's not going to.
Yeah.
But you've learned something, though.
Yeah.
What not to do.
What not to do.
And you get ideas on that mm-hmm. when you go into the next one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which goes into the third piece of that, which is to own it, mm-hmm. then own it. You have to have it in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
We hate to lose what we already have. One of the questions I'll ask people is, how many of you will watch TV if you lose a remote? Most people won't go to the TV. I mean, years ago, how did we change the channel? We went to the TV and... We won't do that now. I mean, how many people would park the car in the garage if they lost their garage door open or broke? We don't want to lift the door open anymore. That's how we did it originally.
Mm-hmm.
We get used to what we have, and that's one of the inhibitors to achieving more.
Mm-hmm.
We're used to being, and now we have to do something that hurts, that's uncomfortable to get to where we want to go.
Yeah.
But once we own it in our mind and we have it before we achieve it, it goes back to step number one. We begin to attract more of that to ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's good. Owning it. And then owning it. And then I noticed that the next one is eat nails for breakfast. And that interests me because that makes me think that we're going to have to suffer a little bit.
Absolutely.
Nobody wants to suffer. That's probably right now in this culture that we're in is the biggest obstacle is people don't really want to have to do work.
I've read stories of brand new employees that get hired and don't even show up the first day.
It is
beyond me to understand how a person thinks that way.
Uh-huh.
You have to do something. Sure, you might get lost doing what you're doing. You might even get fired, as I have, and most people have gotten fired at some point in their career.
Mm-hmm.
But you learn from that,
mm-hmm.
and you get better as a result of
mm-hmm.
it. And eating nails for breakfast is doing the hard stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's really difficult. One more example, when I was living in Kansas and I was selling advertising, I decided to move to Dallas. I came to Dallas, interviewed with a few radio stations. I was hired by one. What I didn't realize is the sales manager who hired me didn't tell her boss that I was hired. When I showed up for my first day of work, 500 miles away from where I left, she had been fired, and the boss didn't know I was hired.
Oh, gosh.
So I'm standing in the lobby on my very first day with no job.
Mm-hmm.
I had to do something. I had to stick through it and make it work for myself. And I sold myself right there. I was able to get the job. But I was hired at straight commission, no draw, no salary, no clients, knowing no one in a new city. Mm-hmm. Straight commission. What happened after 6 months, there were 10 salespeople there, a few of them quit, and I was the number one salesperson selling more than the other nine altogether. Mm-hmm. But I was focused on what I had to do, and I was working the activity. Mm-hmm. CCDA, correct, consistent daily activity. Once mm-hmm. you develop your plan, just work your plan and don't think. Mm-hmm. Just do it.
Mm-hmm. Implement.
So yeah. There's a difference in being an entrepreneur where you don't have anybody holding you accountable for anything. And being someone who's at a job or a sales position where you've got goals and someone tells you you've got to do it or you get fired. So before you get to this last point, capitalize the first four and give me a nugget for each. What is there anything that's different that's going to be required for an entrepreneur as opposed to someone who's at a job for people who are listening? What's the difference?
If I was to answer that the way I want to answer that, which I will, is that even a person working someplace at a salary mm-hmm. is an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. See, they have a chance to own what they're doing and move up within the company.
Okay.
Or learn enough and start their own company. As an employee, and I was never taught this, and that's why I was fired from my first job. Fortunately, my boss realized that I didn't have the passion for doing what I was doing. Here's the reason why I left. I was hired as a one-man news staff, news director at this radio station in Nebraska. I was working 18 hours a day, sleeping with a police monitor in my bedroom, getting to the police station at 5 in the morning to clear the police log, getting the station because it went off the air at night, doing the first newscast, going to AP and UPI, ripping off the stories, setting up the first newscast, doing a show every Sunday also on top of all that at $500 a month. This is a while back, but it still wasn't very much money. And my boss realized I didn't have the passion. He offered me a job in sales. I'd never sold in my life. My father had, and I never paid attention to what he was doing, but mm-hmm. apparently through osmosis, I picked up some of
yeah,
it.
True.
And I believed in what I was doing. I believed in radio advertising, which kept me going. And I realized that to sell anything, you have to have the belief that you have the best product or service that's out there. Mm-hmm. Now, if we're talking about real estate, mm-hmm. that realtor, if they are selling homes, mm-hmm. need to believe that that home mm-hmm. is the best home for the buyer. Mm-hmm. If they're listing homes, they have to realize that they're the ones who will help get that home sold mm-hmm. as quickly as possible. Mm-hmm. That has to be in your head. Mm-hmm. You have to own that, and you have to go through sometimes a lot of crap to get you where you want to go, mm-hmm. and that's what eating nails for breakfast is all about. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. that last one is in dealing with all that, and that's bouncing back.
Mm-hmm. Bouncing back.
You need to be like that rubber ball. Every time you hit the floor, you pop back up again. You just don't stop. I mean, if you take a look at famous athletes, anybody that's in sports, and I have a passion for sports, especially football, you take a look at a lot of the players, and to get to where they wanted to go, they had to go through a lot. One of my favorite former Cowboys was Bill Bates. I mean, he was a star at Tennessee, but he did not get drafted, and he was a walk-on for the Cowboys. But in his book, in his biography, autobiography, he talks about the fact that every single year he had a fight to make the team. Now, arguably, mm-hmm. he was one of the best players for the Cowboys because mm-hmm. he had such mm-hmm. a passion for what mm-hmm. he was doing. But that's because he wanted it so badly. And that's what anybody has to do. They have to be relentless and almost be like that pit bull, that dopamine pincher that locks on mm-hmm. and just doesn't let go.
Mm-hmm,
right.
And it seems to me like in our culture, I'm not going to say in our culture, it's been this way always, that no matter how good you get at something, you still always got to prove yourself. So you can't ever get rested on your laurels and think, ooh, I've made it. Now I can, you know, go to the beach and not pay attention to my company or whatever.
That's like finishing with a good month.
Yeah.
You go, okay. Or you listen last, when the, in basketball last night when Kentucky got defeated and they went to that coach and they were like, oh, you celebrate. He said, we're going to enjoy this for 45 minutes. And then they span to the locker room, which is normally guys throwing water bottles and yeah. all that. They're all sitting in total order, and the coach is at the front, and he's talking to them mm-hmm. after just beating the number 3 ranked team mm-hmm. in the tournament. Mm-hmm. I mean, that to me was just like, wow, yeah. that's focus.
Yeah. We're always having to prove ourselves.
Right, you got to prove the next game. So
you use a very good word. You use the word focus. If we take a magnifying glass and hold it over a piece of paper on a really hot day in Dallas, 100 degrees, if you hold that magnifying glass over the paper, what's going to happen?
Burn.
It's going to burn.
Yeah.
But what happens if you do this? Move it around. Nothing happens.
Mm-hmm.
That's why the focus on anything we want
good.
To do will make that goal burn mm-hmm. and create success.
Mm-hmm.
Touch
that's
on the cell when you see the whites of their eyes. Is that one-on-one you're referring to? Or
it is, but the reason I came up with that is because you have to see somebody, you look in the eyes and see them. And the analogy that I give is if you're in a retail store,
yeah.
And you're looking for something. And a clerk, I'm not saying salesperson, but a clerk comes up to you, and generally what question do they ask you? Can I
help you
with
anything?
Can
yeah.
I help you?
Okay. And what's the first thing, what's the first word that people usually say?
No.
No, just looking.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what happened is you put something in front of you so they couldn't see the whites of your eyes,
mm-hmm.
and that person turns around and leaves.
Mm-hmm.
But a successful salesperson is going to want to get that blockage down.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times they'll pull it down and you're going to push it back up again.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is the question they ask, can I help you? And that's a closed-ended question.
Mm-hmm.
And the person generally says no. But instead of that, say, well, it looks like you're looking at this product right here and you have some interest. Would you like some ideas on what to do with this and what type of cost it involves? Now you have their attention and that block has come down and
mm-hmm.
you can see the whites of their eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Until you can get communication with that customer, you can't see them. People
mm-hmm.
won't talk to you. And hence the name of the book, Sell When You See the Whites of the Eyes, which was taken from the statement in 1812 when the British were taking over Baltimore and Washington, D.C., and one of the officers said, don't shoot till you see the whites of their eyes. You've got to get close enough
mm-hmm.
to them.
Wow.
Right.
So what about in today's culture of technology where it's very rare that we actually meet someone because we're online doing everything. How can you translate sell when you see the whites of their eyes to that? Someone who's got an internet business.
It's more difficult.
Yeah.
Because when you're in many cases cold emailing,
mm-hmm.
you don't know what that person wants or what ideas they have, but many times it's asking questions that you know somebody like that. For instance, if you're sending emails to prospective customers who want to sell their home,
mm-hmm.
you might want to ask questions about have you found it difficult to sell your own home? Is there anything about your home that you think needs to be improved? Once you start asking the questions that you know they have some interest in, then there's a good chance they're going to respond to you.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you have to develop a number of different emails ahead of time to
mm-hmm.
see which ones work, or do email A and email a B,
mm-hmm.
different ones to
mm-hmm.
see which one has a better result.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it takes a little bit more effort.
Yeah, it does.
I have a part of my CCDA, or Correct Consistent Daily Activity, I make at least 20 contacts every day,
mm-hmm.
either by phone or by email.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sending things out daily, on a regular basis. The majority of emails and calls I make do not turn into sales, but I'm still making them.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes people that don't buy from me help me find people that do buy from me.
Mm-hmm.
And it pays off because the money that I make more than overshadows the time I put in to make those calls and emails.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and that activity alone too, because once you jump in and start making that first call to three calls, you kind of get into a little
momentum takes over
and you begin to like, all right, I'm going to make the next call. And
it does.
And then, you know, you all of a sudden you hit one.
Mm-hmm.
And each one is getting you closer and closer. Each one you don't make is pulling you farther and farther away from achieving whatever goal you have.
Right, mm-hmm. right. So are we close to wrapping up?
Yeah, we need to wrap here in just a minute. But I really want him to talk about the prospecting part.
Prospecting?
Of this. Yeah.
Prospecting
your way to millions.
It's all about prospecting.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you're shouting in the wind. You've got to have somebody to sell to. And one of the things that I teach when I'm working with salespeople
mm-hmm.
on selling is how to get more referrals. I mean, there's lots of ways to prospect. There's cold calling and there's doing direct mail. There's a lot of things. But when you're trying to get referrals from somebody, it's a matter of asking the right kind of questions.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, I've been doing a lot of work in the automobile industry lately, working with salespeople. And the first question the salesperson asks a new car buyer is, who else do you know that wants to buy a new car? The answer they generally get is, I can't think of somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Here's why. we generally don't know when people want to buy a new car until we see the new car in their driveway. That's not something people talk about. Mm-hmm. So in getting a new referral in any industry, you have to ask about conditions. For instance, who do you know that buys a car every 2 or 3 years? Who do you know that has a child getting ready to graduate high school or college? Mm-hmm. These are conditions that would cause a person mm-hmm. to purchase a car. Doesn't mean they will, but when you use those conditions, let's talk about real estate. Who do you know that's been living in their home for 20 years?
Right.
Who do you know that buys a new home every few years? And those are conditions to help you get a potential prospect.
Right.
And you keep doing that, you finally find people start buying.
Mm-hmm. I refer life to those events. As, I've always called those life events.
Yeah.
Those are life events.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what is the stimulus to it. Rather than when you're given the car example, the real estate is a tendency. Who do you know that might be interested in buying and selling a mm-hmm. home? Same difference. Mm-hmm. But to your point, life events stimulate a different kind of possibility because there is going to be activity generated from that event.
Mm-hmm. And generally, people don't talk about the new car they're going to buy or they're going to look for a new home. It's something they work on their own, which, again, we're talking about those life events mm-hmm. that help you find out who a prospect potentially is.
Right, mm-hmm. right.
Good stuff. Let's do our three takeaways.
That's
I'm
fine.
I'm going to do mine real quick while you're thinking of yours. But I do think that from what we've talked about today, working is, that's what's settling in on me, is being active. That resonates with me, and I think with what Mark and I talk about so much on the show, is to be a successful salesperson or a successful business person and business owner. You just got to work your business. You've got to. And the other thing that comes to my mind is the activity in getting your sights on something. So I want you guys to remember that. Set your sights on what it is that you want, and then take a step toward it by taking action. Even if you think that action is not going to get you anything, or you're going to try to talk yourself out of it, take action toward what you've set your sights on. And I believe the results will come. And I know that's just two, but why don't you tell us what three things you want to leave with the audience today?
Well, I just gave you five with the five areas I talk about. But if we're talking about salespeople, you maybe think of a couple of things. And the activity, once you set your sight on something, this is where you want to be, this is where you are right now.
Yeah.
Work backwards from where you want to be. What's it going to take me to get there? How many calls do I have to make? How many doors do I have to knock on? That's why I like realtors that have a farm area that they're working, because they're constantly seeing those people. And to a large degree, every single realtor, whether it's commercial or real estate, whatever sector they're in, everybody else is doing the same thing they're doing. So why should I do business with one and not the other? Well, it's generally a relationship, and B, it's a service that you're providing. Mm-hmm. Can you give more service than the next person?
Mm-hmm.
And can you develop a relationship better than the other person?
Mm-hmm.
That's why we talked earlier about the fact that Mark, in the title business, it's all customer service.
Mm-hmm.
Every title business does the exact same thing. It's those closers in a lot of cases that develop the rapport with the customer and mm-hmm. gets them to want to come back the next time they purchase a home.
Correct.
So it's that service, it's the consistency of what you want to be doing, and it's knowing the correct items that you want to work toward.
Yeah, good stuff. Mark, you want to close us out?
Sure. Like Steve, I operate off a checklist. I get up in the morning, I do my checklist, and I work through that checklist. I was mm-hmm. taught that by Billy Vaughn, and he's mm-hmm. got it on his desk to this day that mm-hmm. he does that. So he taught me that.
Is your checklist on paper or on your phone?
It's on paper.
Okay.
Yeah, because everything, when I make calls or anything, I write notes, and then I refresh it, and I bring it back down to a new fresh, because I don't like all scribbling all over. Get it back, get my checklist updated, and go again. And then a system. What's your system mm-hmm. going to be in order for you to get to the outcome?
So key.
That side. For me, my system has to be from the time I receive that contract through our system mm-hmm. to closing. And how is our process working? And how do I beat the market in that process mm-hmm. to get to the closing table, to that side? I think the biggest thing right now with what we earlier talked about with NAR and those things, I think the real estate community needs to really step back and take a hard look at why this happened. And to me, the reason this happened is because the lack of perception of value of the service that they provided. Because if they really saw the value of what was being provided, the commission is not the issue.
Wow.
And so
commission will come as an afterthought.
Absolutely. They'll be thrilled to be paying that. And it's not that they're objecting to the commission, anyhow, in my opinion, but I think rather than panic and be mad and think, I think what the industry needs to step back and say, why did we get to that position? And what do we do about now? More than ever, we've got to show the value of having a realtor represent you in buying a home or selling a home.
Wow.
So that's something that's just really been resonating with me lately after I've been reading and reading and reading about this outcome. Right. So, but that's a constant adjustment to our environment, the changing of our environment, being relentless on focusing what we have to do in that change, and that's where success will come.
That's awesome. So, well, that's a wrap, guys. And go out there and be relentless.
Relentless.
All right. We'll see you next month. Ciao,
ciao,
everybody.